with Tour Guide Tell All. I'm here today with another mini episode of our wonderful Tour Guide Tell All podcast. We have our full episodes every week that delve into the saucier side of American history. And then we have these mini episodes weekly that look at sites and places in the district that maybe you have come across and you might not know the history of. So we love to use these smaller episodes to show you maybe undiscovered sides of our city, Meridian Hill / Malcolm X Park. We're going to be talking about a woman who inspired the development, or I should say redevelopment, of Meridian Hill Park, and who today has a really beautiful building named for her. This is a site that many locals have probably walked by or been to, but might not realize the significance of the woman for who the site is named for. So we're going to be talking today about the Josephine Butler Park Center, which is a beautiful yellow mansion just alongside of Meridian Hill / Malcolm X Park. We're going to talk a little bit about the building itself and why Josephine Butler is such an incredible local figure. So hopefully, before you've listened to this episode, you've listened to our previous episodes about the history of Meridian Hill / Malcolm X Park. If you haven't, I encourage you to stop now, go back, listen to my colleagues Dan and Candon tell you about this neighborhood and why its development is so interesting. But if you've already listened to those, you might know that right along the east side of the park, there's a beautiful yellow historic mansion. It's a really gorgeous space. It's most notable, I think, today for present-day Washingtonians as a popular wedding venue. My best friend got married there in 2018, and I think most people who've been there have been there for weddings or fundraisers. It's a gorgeous 1927 Renaissance Revival-style mansion. This building, like a lot of buildings in the Meridian Hill neighborhood, was initially an embassy. So this was, in particular, an embassy for Hungary and Brazil. The man who designed the mansion was a man named George Oakley Totten Jr. He's quite known for doing a number of the buildings surrounding the Meridian Hill Park and the Meridian Hill neighborhood, and a number of buildings along Embassy Row. So if you have taken one of our free tours by foot, Embassy Row walking tours, or have checked out our self-guided walking tour online, several of the buildings you would see on that tour were done by Totten Jr. That includes the Turkish Ambassador's Residence, which used to be the Turkish Embassy, and the Embassy of Cameroon, which is one of my favorite buildings on Massachusetts Avenue. You probably heard a little bit of this if you listened to our initial episode about Meridian Hill Park, but the development around the park was really motivated by a woman named Mary Foote Henderson. Henderson was a woman really ahead of her time. She was the widow of a Missouri senator who introduced the 13th Amendment. They were very influential in Washington, but ultimately had to leave as his career sort of leveled off. They went back to Missouri. They got very rich. She became a widow, and then with all that money, she moved back to Washington, D.C., and really beautified the area. Henderson, we should do like a whole episode on Henderson. She was a supporter of suffrage, temperance. She was an early adopter of vegetarianism, and she was really, I think, aggressive in trying to redevelop the idea of what Washington, D.C. could be, that it could be this federal city, but also this incredible, beautiful neighborhood, a city that could really be surpassing Boston and Philadelphia and New York. She's really responsible for the real estate development around what we know as Meridian Hill Park today. Of course, it's important to note that doing a lot of that development did push out a working class African American neighborhood that had existed there since the Civil War. One of my favorite sort of little tidbits about Henderson's vision is that she wanted to rename 16th Street, which, if you are Washingtonian, you're probably familiar with 16th Street. It basically goes up from the White House north all the way into what is today one of the most vibrant neighborhoods in the city. She wanted to rename that the Avenue of Presidents, and she wanted to put in busts of all the former President of the United States and Vice President. So she wanted to sort of rename the street. And as you were going block to block, you would have seen busts of people like George Washington and John Adams all the way up 16th Street. What's interesting is that they did rename 16th Street, for like a year, and then it didn't really take, and they changed the name back. But she did what she was denied. She was unable to actually have all those busts placed along 16th Street. So when you see this beautiful yellow mansion that is today the Josephine Butler Park Center, that comes from this Henderson era of redeveloping Meridian Hill. Today, the beautiful yellow mansion is actually part of the Washington Parks and People Organization. So this is the Park Center. It's sort of a gathering space for a number of nonprofits that beautify and make Washington, D.C. a better place to live. So organizations like City Kids Wilderness Project, Gala Hispanic Theater, Washington Concert Opera, the D.C. Green Corps Initiative, all of that is based out of this beautiful structure, and it funds a lot of its activity through private rentals, so things like weddings. Now, they named the building for a woman named Josephine Butler, who I think is criminally under-recognized in Washington, D.C. today. She was such a vital figure from the 1950s up to her death in the 1990s. And I think that with 20, 30 years since her death, she's lost some of her maybe name notoriety in the city. But I really think that anybody who lives in the city today should have an understanding of how much we owe Josephine Butler. Now, before I jump in to talk about Josephine Butler, I should be clear, there is a British feminist sort of suffragist writer with the same name. We are talking about a very different Josephine Butler. So if you Google Josephine Butler, you're going to probably find this sort of English suffragist writer figure who's very significant, but we are talking instead about a woman local to Washington, D.C. She was born in 1920. She was affectionately known as Jo. So if you look up a lot of newspaper articles or things written about people who know her, she was usually referred to as Jo. She was the daughter of sharecroppers. She was the granddaughter of enslaved people. So when we think about sort of the generation she's coming up in, which this New Deal generation under the FDR presidency, she's not very far removed from the Civil War era. So she comes from Virginia to Washington, D.C. She's going to carve out a new life for herself and become one of the most respected city leaders of her generation. She moves to the District of Columbia in the 1930s. She's a young woman. She lies about her age, and she gets a job as a laundress, which was not an uncommon occupation for young single women at the time. She very quickly realizes that there's a lot of discrimination in this job because of gender, because of race, and she is going to form the very first union for Black women laundry workers in Washington, D.C. That connection to the labor movement is going to continue through her lifetime. She's going to be both active in union leadership and often be a thorn in the side of unions in D.C. She's going to really actively engage with the struggles for women in unions as well as the struggle of African Americans. Now, she'll end up leaving her job as a laundress. She's going to clerk at the Veterans Administration for several years, but she's going to get blacklisted from that job and from any future government employment because of what was deemed her leftist associations. She was a pacifist. She was a woman who was very much engaged with the left side of politics. And because of some of the people she socialized with, some of the groups that she joined, she was blackballed out of government work. Even though she had a great deal of experience as a laundress and then as a clerk, she couldn't find a government job, and she would often work part-time in government cafeterias for several years to kind of get herself back on her feet. Even when she was working in government cafeterias, she was a bit of a union agitator. She fought back against union leadership that wanted to raise dues on part-time workers, and she basically argued that it was ridiculous to expect part-time workers to pay the same union dues or fees as full-time workers. Now, she really comes to, I think, prominence in local media and kind of in the local press because of the effort to desegregate Washington, D.C. schools. With Brown versus the Board of Education, there's a real push to desegregate gate schools in Washington, D.C. Josephine Butler, despite the fact that she did not have any children, was actually chairman of the residence group for Morgan Elementary, which was a very large, beloved elementary school in Washington, D.C., primarily catering to an African-American community. This school is going to merge with John Quincy Adams Elementary, bringing us what is Adams Morgan School and ultimately the Adams Morgan neighborhood. So I think a lot of people who maybe know Adams Morgan more from a social perspective, going out and enjoying the restaurants or bars there, might not realize that that name for the neighborhood comes from the joining together of two schools during the desegregation movement. And she was really adamant and involved in the educational process, despite the fact that she didn't have children, but she realized the importance for the city of having these desegregated schools, of having people work together, live together, and go to school together. She really gets engaged politically in the 1960s and 1970s. She's going to be appointed to the DC Coordinating Committee for the International Women's Year in the 1970s. If you've been watching Mrs. America on Hulu, you'll get a little bit of the International Women's Year in there. It sort of focuses on the big women's conference that would take place in Houston, but all across the country, there were these committees that were dedicated in cities and states for really trying to bring women to equal footing when it came to government jobs and engagement in their community. And that's something that was really important to Josephine Butler. I think the thing, though, that's most significant from a local perspective is the fact that Josephine Butler will ultimately be one of the co-founders of the DC Statehood Party. Now, in 1971, Josephine Butler had been an active Democrat pretty much her whole life. She had come up as a New Deal Democrat, very much inspired by Franklin D. Roosevelt, but she was pretty appalled by the violence that she saw at the 1968 Democratic Convention, and she was really concerned that the Democratic Party wasn't taking enough interest in what was happening in Washington, D.C. By 1971, Washington, D.C. was really booming. It was growing. It had been under home rule for several years at this point, and yet it still didn't have representation, voting representation in Congress. Now, to back it up a little bit, the District of Columbia was created by an act of Congress in 1790. Congress created the district as a federal district and often would appoint governors to oversee what was happening in the district. Luckily, in 1973, the District of Columbia wins home rule, which essentially allows the district to elect a mayor and a council and gives the district some autonomy outside of Congress. Yet, despite all of this autonomy, there's still a great deal of influence from Congress exerted over the district. And Josephine Butler, among others, is really concerned about the fact that Congress, overwhelmingly at this time, white and male, doesn't understand what's happening in the District of Columbia and certainly doesn't know what's best for the district, which really is Chocolate City at this point. It's overwhelmingly African American. It's a very diverse city. It's a city that's attracting immigrants and people from all over the country. So in 1971, alongside a man, Julius Hobson, she is going to found the DC Statehood Party. This party is going to be focused on a platform similar to the Democratic Party, but with DC statehood as a primary plank. They really feel that it's essential that DC have representation in Congress, and they're very frustrated by what they feel is a lack of either party to take DC representation seriously. One of the quotes from Josephine Butler when they formed the party is this mission: to redress the inequity that Washington residents were not able to exercise their full right as citizens because they live in a federal district controlled by the U.S. Congress. So she is going to be a passionate member of the D.C. Statehood Party. Statehood is going to be a cause that Butler will continue through her life. And frankly, statehood is a really important cause for most residents today. I think pretty much everyone that I know in Washington, D.C., almost everyone I interact with, believes strongly in D.C. statehood. And I think that's something that has come up a lot in our current political climate. Butler will, of course, found the party. Not too surprisingly, in 1977, she's going to become party chair, and she's going to run for D.C. City Council twice with the party backing, although she will never be elected to D.C. City Council. Josephine Butler is going to find herself in her later life really becoming an environmental pioneer. She's going to fight very strongly against air pollution and water pollution in Washington, D.C., but really around the world. Before environmental justice really has a name, Butler is speaking out about how pollution disproportionately affects the poorest parts of a city, how it often affects minority parts of a city. And she's really drawn to action when it comes to pollution. She can draw the connection between health and education and care to pollution. She's going to be a longtime volunteer and activist with the DC Lung Association. Part of this is influenced by her own experience with tuberculosis. She is going to contract tuberculosis. It's going to lay her out for several years. And once she kind of comes through this, she is motivated to really advocate for cleaner air. She knows that pollution only exacerbates many of the issues that are brought on by disease. In addition to being an environmental activist, she's going to be a healthcare reform activist, and as we bring it back to Meridian Hill Park, an advocate for parks and wildlife spaces. She loves city living. She believes that cities often provide the best opportunities economically for African Americans when it comes to jobs and sort of stability financially, but she really is concerned about having green spaces for children and families to enjoy in these cities. If you listened to our earlier episode on the history of Meridian Hill Park, you might remember that by the 1970s and 1980s, Meridian Hill Park was not the safest, nicest place to go if you were a resident of Washington, D.C. Maybe you might cut through during the day, but it was unfortunately a target for a lot of crime and for drug dealing. So Josephine Butler kind of tackles this head on. She becomes co-chairman of the Friends of Meridian Hill Park. She's going to spearhead efforts to reclaim the park space for the community. She's going to be one of the people who helps to introduce the Smile campaign, which Dan explained so beautifully in our previous episode. But if you didn't listen to that, the basic idea was that it would be super unnerving to drug dealers and criminals to have a bunch of nice people smiling at them. So Josephine Butler would get volunteers to go into the park, and they would just go and smile at everybody. And it sort of helped to turn the park around. She would go and weed the park. She would go and clean the statues and spaces. She was very, very engaged, hands-on in the park. She saw revitalizing the park as a way to revitalize the city, which was so essential in the late 1980s into the 1990s. She would come to quite a bit of national acclaim for the work that she did with Meridian Hill / Malcolm X Park. In 1994, President William Clinton would have his Earth Day celebration at Meridian Hill, and she was asked to introduce him. So she gave the introduction to President Clinton at the park. And during this introduction, she gave a famous to DC speech. She gave what she called the Earthworm speech. This was a sort of story she would tell over and over. In fact, in her obituary, which we'll link to in the show notes, the earthworm antidote was referenced in her obituary. But she would always tell people to remember the earthworm. This was something throughout Josephine Butler's life. Remember the earthworm. The idea with this earthworm story is that the earthworm might be very small. It might be insignificant. It might be something that you pass by and you don't even think twice about. But the earthworm plays an incredibly important role in the health of plant life and really in the life cycle of all living things, that we can't have a growing, healthy earth and we can't have this symbiotic kind of ecosystem without the earthworm. So this was a story she loved to tell to children. She loved to relay this anecdote in speeches, and she shares it in her introduction to President Clinton for Earth Day in 1994 at Meridian Hill Park. Clinton on Earth Day praises the park. He praises the turnaround, the community activism, and he recognizes Josephine Butler in his speech. And then a couple years later, he would actually award Josephine Butler with a National Leadership Award. So she was recognized for her efforts in turning around the park. The next year, 1995, was the 25th anniversary of Earth Day. So Earth Day was established in 1970. In 1995, Josephine Butler is going to organize a march. It starts in Meridian Hill, Malcolm X Park. She gets 4,000 people from the Adams Morgan and Meridian Hill community. They gather in the park, they chant, they march, and they go all the way down to the Capitol building. In 1995, there was an estimated about 250,000 people people celebrating Earth Day. And she led this group of Washington locals, Washingtonians, to come and join this gathering. She does this for two reasons. She wants to highlight the work that had been done in the city, reclaiming green spaces, but also as a part of the statehood movement. She brings people out carrying banners and signs specific to the fight for statehood in the district. This is something she'll carry on through her life. Now, sadly, Josephine Butler is going to pass away in 1997 at the age of 77. So she unfortunately doesn't get to live to see the district blossom into what it is today. And she doesn't get to live to see, I think, the continuation of her legacy. Josephine Butler is a name that I don't think enough locals mention, that we don't talk about, but she's such an incredible figure. She was such an important advocate. We're going to link to some of her accomplishments in the show notes, and you're going to see, I couldn't even list in this episode all the organizations that she founded or was in deeply engaged in, but she was really, truly a community advocate on the ground. So her legacy today, if you go to Meridian Hill / Malcolm X Park, you'll see just on the northeastern side of the park, this beautiful yellow mansion. Today is the Josephine Butler Park Center. It's an absolutely beautiful space. If there isn't an event going on, you can usually tour the space. There's a lot of cool events that take place inside, and the Friends of Meridian Hill Park still do a lot of great activities and events both at the Josephine Butler Park Center and in the park itself. There's another really cool sort of tribute to Josephine Butler, and it's very new. In 2019, the city actually converted a handful of call boxes in downtown DC to honor significant women in Washington, DC. Maybe you've seen a call box. We often point them out on our Georgetown tours, as well as our tours of Embassy Row and the DuPont Circle neighborhood. But if you're not familiar with a call box, try to imagine sort of these metal boxes that are on poles sprinkled throughout the city. They were like the early version of a 911 system or the way to contact emergency services. Most of them have been converted into public art or historical markers. And one of them is for Josephine Butler today. There's a call box at the corner, the intersection of 14th and K Street Northwest. So just across from McPherson Square Park, it's outside of a hotel. It's a call box with Josephine Butler's portrait and a little bit of information about her legacy. So we'll link to this in the show notes on our website. I love the call boxes. I actually lead a tour that goes through all nine of these call boxes and the nine incredible women that they highlight. But I think this is a really nice way for the city to recognize a woman that may not ever be as famous as some of the big names that we talk about, the kind of women who have buildings named for them or memorials built to them, but a woman who did the work. She did the day-to-day work in the community to make Washington, D.C. a better city, to make it a more diverse city, to make it a healthier city, to make us a more environmentally friendly city. And she came to the city hoping for a new, better life, and she left the city better than she found it. So if it were up to me, we'd probably name a lot more for her in Washington, D.C. than just the Park Center. She's the kind of figure that I would love to see a bust of outside of the Wilson Building, where we could honor our city leaders. But that's Josephine Butler. Hopefully next time you're in Meridian Hill Park, you'll take a little stroll on the east side, see her building, and remember her legacy. We want to thank you, of course, for tuning in to Tour Guide Tell All. If you enjoyed our podcast, we definitely encourage you to subscribe on whatever your favorite podcast channel is, and please leave us a review. We love your feedback and your reviews. It helps us to make the podcast better. If you are on Twitter, you can follow us at Tour Guide Tell. We want to hear more from our listeners, so definitely follow us on Twitter, send us your thoughts on the episodes and any suggestions you have for future episodes. We've got a lot of great episodes coming up soon, so you want to make sure you subscribe. And if you really love the podcast, consider becoming a patron. Our patrons get access to special content, new episodes, videos, a lot of good stuff early, and you might get a chance to even suggest a topic for future episode. So this is Becca with Tour Guide Tell All, talking about one of my favorite DC women, Josephine Butler. I will see you next time.
Tour Guide Tell All is brought to you by some of the fine guides at DC by Foot, one of the many cities covered by free tours by foot. And as we start to reopen cities, we are giving private tours. Please check us out at freetoursbyfoot.com. Tour Guide Tell All is Rebecca Grawl, Rebecca Fackner, Candon Arciniega, and me, Dan King. Next time on Tour Guide Tell All, we'll explore the assassination of President Garfield and the man that assassinated him, Charles Guiteau.
He's convinced himself that his very small contribution is much, much, much bigger than it really is. And he's convinced that, you know, he was the decisive factor, and that when Garfield gets elected, obviously it is because of Guiteau's influence.